Okay, we're going to start here at the bottom of Dalet Amud Bet, the last line. Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, Dine Mimonot B'Shlosha. When we do anything when it comes to adjudicating monetary cases, then we only require three judges. V'Maya Mumche D'Rabim. If he's a Mumche D'Rabim, then Dan Afilu Yechidi. Then he can even be a single judge. Now, where is this? According to whom is this? Or where do we know this from? So Rashi claims that we know it from the Pasuk, which we have spoken about, but Tzedek Tishpot Et Amitecha. Tzedek Tishpot Amitecha, Tishpot is in the singular. And therefore, Tzedek Tishpot Amitecha says that a singular judge will be sufficient. Now, Rashi claims this is only according to V'kasavar Ein Kan Iruv Parshiot. It's only according to one who believes that the Pasuk, in the middle of the Parsha of Shomer Chinam, says, Asher Yomar Kiuzeh I don't give me a vote to Varshnehem, that the Pasuk of Modem Mimikzat, right, is not about Halvaot, it's not about loans, but it fits in, it's from Parsha the Shomrim, it belongs to Parsha the Shomrim. That means that the requirement of Elohim, 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 of three judges, only has application to Shomrim and the derivatives, meaning Zelot and Chavalot. On the other hand, Hoda'ot, V'Halvaot, what do we learn that from? That sounds like we're learning from Tzedek Tishpot Amitecha. So Rashi's understanding of this memra has two limitations. This idea that Mumcha L'Rabim can be Afilu Yechidi. Number one, Rashi believes it's according to the one who says, Ein Kan Eruv Parshiot. And number two, for me, it seems if that's what he believes, that means that he thinks it's only true by Hoda'ot, by Halvot. Because the one who says Eruv Parshiot believes that Elohim, Elohim, Elohim applies to Gzilot Chavalot and Hoda'ot, by Halvot. And therefore Rashi says he can't have this idea, he can't subscribe to the concept that there's a Mumcha L'Rabim can be Dan Yechidi, because he has a Pasuk Min HaTorah that says you need three. So if that's from that, it would indicate, or you would think, that when it comes to a person who says Ein Eruv Parshiot here, then the Gzelot and Chavalot do have the requirement of Elohim, Elohim, Elohim. So therefore there, this wouldn't apply. Where does it apply? Be'odot Ovot, where the Torah does not address how many judges. That's where Dan Yechidi. That's where Rashi says. Tosos disagrees. Tosos says from the sugya later on, it's really the end of today's daf, beginning of tomorrow's daf. Tosos seems to say that the Gemara doesn't seem to be saying that, because the Rebbe is going to say that Divrei Akol, according to everybody, Dan Yechidi. There is according to everybody, a Shnayim Shedanu Dinei Mamonot, a Divrei Akol and Dinei Din. So Rebbe says it's according to everybody. Well, it's not according to everybody, according to the way Rashi's learning. So Tosa says that even according to one who says Eruv Parshiot Kan. Yes, it is a machlokas between them. But then Rabbi Bo comes along and says Divrei Akol. How could he say Divrei Akol based on the way Rashi is setting up the machlokas here? The way Rashi is setting up the machlokas here, there's clearly somebody who believes that it's not that way. So how could Rabbi Bo make such a statement of Divrei Akol? Forgetting about Shmuel then. Shmuel disagrees with him. Saying, but he's, the people came before him. Right, they all say Divrei Akol. It's not the case according to Rashi. It also says over here that Elohim, 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 even according to one who says Eruv Parshiot Kan, that is a requirement of three judges midoraisa. Nevertheless, there's a takanat chachamim that you can use a yochin mumcha l'rabim dayan dan afil yachidi. And that, based on the Tosfos, Tosfos says it has much broader application. This idea that a mumcha l'rabim dan afil yachidi is not limited to, number one, the person who says Ein Kan Eruv Parshiot, even according to what it says, Eruv Parshiot. And number two, by definition, that we're also not limited to Hodot Vavot. It would also include Gzelot V'Chavolot. And then the Mumcha the Rabbim can be done in those cases. So Amar Rav Nachman, Rav Nachman says, Konana, Dan Dini Memonot V'Chidi. Someone like me can do it alone. Right? Rav Nachman was we know from many places, the Dayan. And we pass on the life of him because he is a Dayan and that he was careful or very, involved in these types of issues, and therefore knew the halachos and passed on the halachos, and therefore he says, "I am the one; I could do such a thing." Someone like me could also be done by yichidi. What's the qualifications to make you into a yachid mumcha d'rabim? Is it that I learned Visarvina, not only have I learned or I have that wisdom, I can apply that wisdom, I can use it, I can extend it beyond the knowledge that I have. Vinakitna Rishutna, and I also have permission, going to Rashi Meresh Galuta, right, that I'm allowed to dan dine mamononot. The Gemara will later on ask what this Rishut is, but it'll be the equivalent of what we call smicha. So he's been granted the right to adjudicate. I said those three liquidations. Aval lo nakit reshuta dina lo dina. But if he does not have permission, then he's disqualified, and his judgments are not good judgments. Odilma, afagad lo nakit reshuta dina dina. Or maybe even without such a permission, without such a granting of smicha, you still would have the right to be dan yechidi. Now, which one is it? Is the reshut of the reish galuta ma'akev or not ma'akev? Tashma. Tamar zucha braid Rav Nachman dan dina v'tah. He was dan a din and he made a mistake. Ata the kameid Rav Yosef, he came from Yosef Amalei. Im kabluch alayhu lo tishalem. If the litigants accepted the you upon them, then you don't have to pay. V'lo, if they did not accept you upon them, zil shlim, you have to go and pay. Shma mina, for this we conclude, ki lo nakit reshuta dina dina shma mina. Because here, even though Mar Zutra went ahead and was paskening, despite the fact that he did not necessarily have reshut over here, and
he only has to pay out of his own pocket if his decision is binding, and therefore he's the one who has to make a
payment,
right?
Right. So here the Shema Minoah, again, like Shaul is pointing out to us, as Rashi says, that the issue here is the fact that when the Edim accept him, when the litigants accept him, it works. When the litigants don't accept him, his din is still binding, and he has to pay. Meaning that otherwise we would terminate the din. If his din was not binding, then he doesn't have to pay because his din has no bearing. It has no effectiveness. The fact that his din has effectiveness, despite the fact that he has no shoot from the Reish Galuta, shows you that it's din adin. So now the one says, Amarav, I'm on Dvai Lemeitan Dina. Someone who wants to grant, you know, be a judge and adjudicate. He taught me by the miftara, and if he makes a mistake, he will be patur. He should get permission from the Reish Galuta in order to adjudicate. Meaning that if he has permission from the Reish Galuta, then in that case he will be patur. Shmuel says the same thing. He should get permission from the Reish Galuta, because since you have permission to be done, that you basically are indemnified from mistakes that you are making, and that you will not have to pay up if you do make mistakes, because the fact that you have permission brings you into the system, and then you're protected by the system now that you've been granted the right to give psak aloch or to adjudicate. So Rashi says now, pshito. Just before we go on to that, I just point out that Tosfos over here disagrees with Rashi about this idea that the acceptance of the litigants is that they accept him to give the din plus any mistakes, versus the case where they didn't accept him is where he simply accepted his din. Tosus over here says that he doesn't think that that's the difference between them, and he says v'kasha dim kein my daik mehocha ta'afilu lo gamir v'savir nami mashasa soy v'shalem v'beito. Right, even if he didn't learn anything, he could be, if you're going to say that the give us a din Torah and accepted the judge upon them, then it's basically an acceptance of some sort of binding arbitration. If you're accepting a binding arbitration, what is it? What are you proving from here that you were done? You say to an individual, listen, why don't you done din Torah for us? So you just ask him to do a binding arbitration or to adjudicate in a proper manner. And why does it matter whether he learned, he didn't learn, it gets permission? You have no idea what the failure is over here that they're saying, go zil shlim, go pay when you make the mistake. So Tosfos doesn't like that, and he says that it's a case mukilah b'tekabalah iloi b'she'enu mumche ari, right? That it's a case where someone dachinira ilo lo delo kabluch alai uklal. They didn't accept it upon you at all. So Tosfos in the negative form says, what does it mean lo kabluch? They didn't accept you at all, and they just came before you to judge, but they made no acceptance of your psak halacha. In that case, you have to be zil shlim. In the case where they accept your din, they don't have to go explicitly and say they're going to accept the din, plus they're going to accept any mistake. No. If they accept the din, then that's enough to classify it as good or bad. You accept the din. Now, again, maybe, I don't know what exactly that, but he was it seems to me that it was Gomir Vesavir, that he had some sort of standing. He didn't have necessarily permission from the Reish Galuta to give Sakalacha, but they went before him and presented their case. And it looks like they're asking for adjudication. That's what it seems like. Now, it's similar. The case where they do accept it, it's similar to binding arbitration, though not exactly. Technically, in binding arbitration, you can't appeal a binding arbitration, but the threshold for appeal is very, very high. Over here, according to the Gemara, there is no appeal. I mean, it's whether he makes a mistake or doesn't make a mistake. You have to accept the din that he gives when you take on this sort of binding arbitration, when you accept it upon him. So there's a small difference. So Tosfos doesn't think that the acceptance here is as extreme as Rashi. Rashi thinks the acceptance is that he accepted the din Torah plus any mistakes. And Tosfos says, no, it's simply acceptance of the din Torah versus the non-acceptance, meaning the explicit acceptance of the din Torah versus just presenting the case for this individual looking for an adjudication or some sort of a decision from this individual. All right, now, Amar says, Pshito, Mi'ochel o'ochel u'mi'hotom na'hotom. When you are in Bavel, and you have permission in Bavel to give Pesach Halacha, and you do, you're adjudicating, you're judging in Bavel, you're patur. Mi'hotom na'hotom, if you're in Eretz Yisrael, and you are permission to dine in Eretz Yisrael, and you do so, fine. U'mi'ochel o'ochel, and in a case where you go from here, meaning from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, Mahani, in those cases it helps you, meaning that you are still covered by the indemnification of getting Reshut in Bavel. The question comes up is the other way around, which you're going to see, right? Which is the question of whether when you come from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, does your permission from Eretz Yisrael sufficient to cover you in Bavel? Now why is this? Because it says, because over here in Bavel, we have a din of Shevet, and in Eretz Yisrael, they have a din of Mechukek. In Tanya, we have a Breisa. Lo yasur Shevet mi Yehuda, right? The Shevet, the staff of rulership, will never leave Yehuda. Ilu roshe galiot shebavel. These are the heads, the exarchs in Bavel. Shevodim et Yisrael, that they, right, they judge and they direct and they rule over Bnei Yisrael and Bavel. Peshevet, that's what they're shevet. Mechokek ben raglav, that will not leave Yehuda. Elu bnei banav shel Hillel, these are the grandchildren of Hillel, who are the nesiim of Eretz Yisrael. Shalamdim Torah berabim, that teach Torah in public. And Rashi says, okay, so what's the difference over here? Rashi claims that the shevet lashon sra, veish lehem reshut lahavkir, the hefkir based in hefkir. Those judges in Bavel, or the exilarch in Bavel, was granted such powers that they were basically an independent authority within Bavel. They're an independent authority within Bavel, and they have the right to, say, Hefker based in Hefker, to change monetary ownership. That type of power, or that type of leadership, is what's found in Bavel. On the other hand, the Nesiim of Eretz Yisrael is Michokek. Rashi says, Srara Me'etet, a lower form of rulership, shrodim etam, sheish lem koach v'rshut meit malchei paras. The reason that they are able to do it in Bavel is because they have, or in what is now the Persian, you know, Medo Empire, in those areas, they have permission from the government authorities in order to do this. As opposed to in Eretz Yisrael at that time, which is ruled by the Romans, they're still subject to the Roman rules or some sort of Roman override that does not allow them to do such. Even though it's not so clear, we're going to see in a second, Tosfos does not agree, and it's not so clear that the Eretz Yisrael court system was not of independence, because we know at the time of Hillel and the time of Rabbi, for instance, which we're going to see later on, and Antonius, that Rabbi did have some sort of freedom or some sort of ability to judge and adjudicate. But here Rashi claims the main difference is that in Bavel, they were granted an independent sort of authority, something that similar to what happened in Poland, in the time of the Taz and the others, where there was a court system or the legal system was granted to the Jewish authorities, and they were allowed to judge and adjudicate matters within the community. Right? They were given full powers within their communities, and therefore they are shevet of Yehuda, the Shevet of Yehuda, that's when they're Rodim et Am, they have that type of permission. In Eretz Yisrael, they're able to teach Torah, they're able to guide the people, but they don't have that type of power like they did in Bavel. And therefore, if you have smicha from Bavel, that's a much higher form of smicha, and therefore when you come to Eretz Yisrael, you're allowed to use it. Whereas if you come from Eretz Yisrael, which is a lower form of smicha, you can't use it in Bavel, which we'll see in a second. On the other hand, Tosa says he doesn't understand that. First of all, one of the things is that in other places we see the opposite, that Eretz Yisrael is dictating and not the Bavel. And number two is, why would you apply Shevet to Bavel and not to Eretz Yisrael? Shevet Yehuda makes more sense that it's in Eretz Yisrael where Yehuda once resided, versus Mechokek, which sounds like some sort of alternative leadership, which you'd say is in Bavel and not in Eretz Yisrael.
Or it's more appropriate to apply it to a place where they have more independent power.
Right. The only problem is that it's not so clear that in Eretz Yisrael they had less power. And that's one of the other historical issues, which is that in Eretz Yisrael there is, seems to be that they had independent power there also. And number two is that we say in other places that we kafin and lehu, we are subject to the psak or the din of Eretz Yisrael and Bavel, we have to listen to them and we are subordinated to their psak in Eretz Yisrael. So he says that he doesn't agree with Rashi's interpretation, but rather says Ainu Taima. He says the Rosh Gola Mizucharim v'Nasish v'Eretz Yisrael minikevot. That the difference is that in the lineage of Yehuda, the Gemara in Yerushalmi says that those, the exilarchs in Bavel, were descended from a male descendant of Yehuda, whereas the Nasi'im of Eretz Yisrael were descended from a female descendant of Yehuda, and therefore those that are found in Bavel trump the ones in Eretz Yisrael simply from that fact, that one is comes from the male lineage and one comes from the female lineage, and therefore that's why they are called Shevet Yehuda versus Mechok ben Maglav. And that's the differentiation or the difference that Tosos points out over here between the two of them. The Gemara says, what's the din when you go from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel? Tashma, Rabba Bar Chano, Dan Dino, Vito. He was done a din, and he was Toeh. Ata the Kameh, the Rabbi Chiyah, came for Bechir, Malay, Ika, Bluchalayu, the same reason we said before. If they accept the litigants accept upon you, Lo Tishalem, you don't have to pay. Ilo, Zil Shlim, not go and pay. Va, Rabba Bar Chano, Rishut Avanokit, right? And Rabba Bar Chano was someone who had Rishut from Eretz Yisrael. We're going to see in a second, there's a story coming up that Rabbi Bar Chano had Rishut from Eretz Yisrael, and despite the fact he was not indemnified when he came and he was judging in Bavel. So Shmamino, Mahatam Lacha, Lo Mahane, Shmamino. Doesn't help when you have your smich or you have permission to dan from Eretz Yisrael, that does not help you in Bavel. Right? Velo Mahane. Does that really not help? Baha Rabba Bar Rav Huna, Kava Minse Bahadi de Bay Resh Galuta, when he used to have quarrels or altercations with the Bay Resh Galuta, Allah Labi Naichu Nakit Nevershuta. He says, you are not the ones who gave me power. You're not the ones who empowered me to judge over here. My ability to judge is not a derivative of yours. Nakit Nevershuta me Abba Mori. I got smicha, or I got permission to dine from Abba Mori. Abba Mori, May Rav, and Rabbi Mari got it from Rav. Rav and Rabbi Chia, and Rav got his from Rabbi Chia. Rabbi Chia may Rabbi. So therefore, I'm not dependent on you. I'm not subject to your rulings, and I don't have to be subordinated to your rulings because my smicha doesn't come from you. My smicha comes from Eretz Yisrael. So here, Rabbi Ravuna is claiming that his smicha in Eretz Yisrael is valid and is good enough to challenge that of the smicha of the Reish Galuto. He was jealous. Those were fighting words. It wasn't that he really had power with it. It's not that his smicha from Eretz Yisrael really made a difference here in Bavel. But he was just trying to, he was fighting with the Reish Galuta. So he wanted to somehow dismiss them or tell them that they didn't have rights to tell him what to do. So he invokes his smicha from Eretz Yisrael to do that. But not that it really has power here in Bavel. It's just words in general. So Mar says, so first of all, if it doesn't help, Rabba Bar Chana Rishuta Dinokot Lamadli. Then why did Rabba Bar Chana bother to get smicha? And we're going to see in a second that Rabba Bar Chana got smicha as he was leaving Eretz Yisrael. He's about to leave Eretz Yisrael and he goes to Bavel and he gets smicha. Now if it's not going to do him any good in Bavel, why bother to get smicha? So Gemara says, La'yarot omdim al gvulin. For the cities that are on the border between Bavel and Eretz Yisrael, where we see that they are really subordinated or subjects of the rulers of Eretz Yisrael, and therefore his smicha will help him for those borderline or border cities. So Gemara says, "My reshuta." What does it mean to get permission to be a judge? Gava nochit Rabba Bar Chana leBavel. When Rabba Bar Chana was going down to Bavel, he's leaving Eretz Yisrael, going to Bavel. Again, here I'm going to point out that it's Rabba Bar Chana, the son of Chana, but not Rabba Bar Bar Chana, right? Rabba Bar Bar Chana. Over here, the Tosfos points it out. Rashi mentions it. It's the son of Chana, not the Bar Bar Chana. All right.
Is that about Bar Chana's nephew?
We can answer in a second. We're going to see who Chana is also. But that the fact that he is a grandson is different than the one who is Rabbi Bar Chana, as Tosus points out, that they lived in different times, and it's not applicable over here. This is the son of Chana versus the grandson of Chana. Tzvi points out, let's say the grandson wouldn't be named for the father, or the son and the grandson wouldn't share the same name, so it would have to be a nephew over here. So Amarlei, Rabbi Chia, the Rabbi. So Rabbi Chia went to Rabbi, who is the Nasir, Yisrael, who is granting smicha at that time. So Rabbi Chia's tongue goes to him and says, Ben Achi Yored the Bavel. My nephew is going to Bavel, and he wants to get smicha for him. So he says, Yoreh. So he says, can he give Hora'ah? I mean that in Isser Veheter, can he go ahead? So he says, Yoreh. He can't do that. Yadin. Is he allowed to do choshen mishpat, do dayanut, yadin, he's allowed to go ahead and be done. Yatir b'churot, is he allowed to be matir b'churot? Yatir, he has permission to be matir b'churot, meaning b'churot have a mum kavua in them, that you're allowed to make them then lose their kedusha, in some sense that you're allowed to eat them, because that was the only way in their day. If something had kedushat b'chor, how did it lose its kedushat b'chor? But a mum kavua. Because there it's post Beit HaMikdash, and the only way to get rid of the Kedushat HaBochor is that it would have a Mum Kavua. So that's a Yatir Bechorot. So he was given permission by Rabbi. He went to Rabbi Chia to Rabbi, and Rabbi grants permission to Rabbi Bar Chana to Dan Yoredeya, Choshen Mishpat, and Bechorot. All three of those areas he gives him permission to do. Ki Ava Nochit Rav the Bavel. So when Rabbi was going down to Bavel, Amalei Rabbi Chia to Rabbi, Ben Achuti Yored the Bavel. My nephew, through my sister, is going to Bavel. So Amalei, Rabbi Chil, Rabbi. So then he says, Yoreh. Again, can he give Isra Heter? He says, Yoreh. Yadin, is he allowed to do Choshe Mishpat? He's allowed to adjudicate? Yadin, he's allowed to do it. Yatir Bechorot, is he allowed to look at Bechorot and be Matir Bechorot to be eaten to Chulin? Al Yatir, he's not allowed to do it. Right now, based on this, the Gemara, two things. One is, why did the Gemara ask before, why did Rabbi Bar Chana bother to get smicha? You see here that all he got smicha as he's walking out of Eretz Yisrael. So the fact that he was getting out as he's leaving Eretz Yisrael must have had some implications when he goes to Bavel. So that the Gemara answered, the implications when he goes to Bavel is that the border cities, on his way there, those border cities, he can deal with them. But not that it has tokif when he gets to Bavel, it's not necessarily they have standing. Gemara says here, Rabbi Chia brought two of his nephews before Rabbi to get smicha. The question is, why did he call one nephew from his sister and one nephew from his brother? Just could be that there one's a nephew.
Why is that a question?
Wow, why is that a question? So that's a question from the Gemara in Brachos. We also have it in Psachim, in Daf Dalet and Psachim, which is that Rav was Rabbi Chia's nephew, but he was his nephew from both sides. His mother and his father were both brother and sisters of Rabbi Chia. So they were both brother and sister, and they were married. How does that happen? Well, if they explain in a second, how could it be? So the Gemara is going to explain here in a second. So then, Gemara says, okay, Ma'ishno l'ma dekakar li ben achi, u'mashem adar dekari ben achuti, v'chi day ma'achi havo ma'ase. If you say, well, that's what it was. You know, they were nephews, one to the sister, one to the brother, v'amar. Mar, so did Mar say, Aibo, v'chano, v'shila, u'marta, v'rebchia kulu b'nei abba bar acha. Right? It's karsula mikafri habu. They were all siblings, all these individual siblings, which are Aibo, who is the father of Rav, right? Chano, who we saw as the father of Rabba, right? V'shila, right? And Marta and Rabbi Chia, over here, all are brothers. Kulu b'nei, they're all brothers who are the sons of Abar Baracha Kasalami Kafrehu. So over here, you see that they all share, right? They are all, now if I look at Rav, and Rabbi Chia is the, Rabbi Chia is saying here that Rav is my nephew. He's his nephew because his brother, Aibo, had Rav. So what do you mean that he's my brother, he's my nephew through my sister, he's my nephew through my brother as well? So why did he say Ben Achuti and not Ben Achi? So, because Rabbi Chia has a brother named Chana, his brother named Aibo, Chana is Rav's father, and Aibo is Rav's father. So he says, Rav Barchua Davar Barachte. Rav was a nephew to Rabbi Chia from both sides. He was a nephew to him from his mother's side as well as his father's side. Rabba Bar Chana Achu Adala Bar Chatei. Rabba Bar Chana was only a nephew because of his brother. I mean, his brother Chana. That's why he was a nephew, but not from the mother's side. So what is the case here? The case here is that they had to have had where the mother and father of Rabbi Chia were previously married. Each one of them had a previous marriage. That means that Abba Bar Acha here was previously married and had sons, including Aibo. It's a number of sons, including Aibo, maybe Chano. That makes them all half-brothers, because when the father later remarries and has Rabbi Chia, Rabbi Chia is a half-brother to these individuals through the father. The mother of Rabbi Chia also was previously married. In that previous marriage, she had a daughter named Ema, who's the mother of Rav. And then later on, the mother of Ema then remarries and has with Abba Bar Acha has Rabbi Chia. So that means Rabbi Chia is she's his half-sister through the mother. They share a common mother and their half-sister. But Aibo and Ema share no common parent. They share no common parent, therefore they're permitted to get married. So even though they are both a half-brother and a half-sister to Rabbi Chia, but the way that they're half-brother or half-sister, one is through the father, one is through the mother, and because of that, they themselves are not related, and therefore Aibo and Ema, when they marry and have Rabbi Chia can say, you are my nephew both through your mother and through your father, because your mother is my half-sister and your father is my half-brother. And they're also permitted to marry because Aibo and Ema are not related. They have no share, no blood relationship. So now the Gemara says, okay, what's going on here? So the Gemara says, okay, because Rav barachua d'Abba barachte. You're right. Rav had both of them. He was both his nephew through his mother and his father. So he mentioned that he was his mother. Rav barachana barachua d'Abba barachte. Rav barachana only had one side, which was his nephew through his father, but not anywhere else. Vibaitema, and some say no, that when he spoke to Rav, Hashem Chachmato, that he called him Barachati because Dikhtiv Amur Lachachma Choti At. So that's why. It was a term of endearment, not a term of familial relationship. It was a term that, here, Rav, who's a special individual, was a tremendous Tamar Chacham, so he calls him, right, Chachma Choti At, and that's why he referenced Rav by being, not that it's not true, it happens to be true as well. But he referenced Rav by the fact that it was his nephew through his mother, because the idea that achoti through my sister is also a term of chokhmah and a term of kilus of praise towards Rav.
Rav had more chokhmah. Why is it al yatir?
So can I ask that? No. Yatir bechorot al yatir. How come by Rav it says he's not going to be matir bechorot? My time up. If you say he's not right wise enough, he's not able to, Tzvi's question, you just said that he was special in his chokhmah, that's why he called him achotiyat. It's fine. He just didn't, he wasn't a baki in mumim. He didn't have that bikiyut. Meaning that he didn't study that area. It's fine. It's not a slight to Rav. It's just Rav just didn't study mumim. V'amar Rav, 18 chadashim gidalti etzel roeh. I did a stage with the shepherds. For 18 months, I did a stage with the shepherds. So I know, Behema Leida, Ezei Mum Kavua, Ezei Mum Mover. I mean that he had, what do you mean he didn't know? What do you mean he didn't have any Bekiyot in it? Here he spent 18 months living with the shepherds in order to learn what a real Mum is. El Lechalek Lo Kavod, the Rabba Barchana. Rabbi wanted Rabba Barchana to be afforded or accorded Kavod when he went to Bavel. Meaning that Rab was already well known in Bavel, and therefore he didn't need the Smicha to be afforded Kavod. Whereas Rabbi Bar Chana was not as well known, and therefore, in order to get him kavod when he went to Bavel, it seems like that Rabbi gave him also smicha so that he would have kavod, but he also gave him something additional to Rav to show that he should be granted such kavod, even on level or on par with Rav, who was well known already. So now, Amar says, or the other possibility is, Mishum ha gufe de Rabbi Kia b'mum etfei. So the fact is, the problem might be that Rav was too big a baki in Mumim. Since he was too big a baki in Mumim, we don't want him to paskin in Bavel and Mumim. Why? Bishari Mume de lo yada inche. He will be matir b'chorot, that people will not understand that this was a mum kavua and not a mum over, because he was such a baki. V'armiki hai gavna shor Rav atu l'mishrei mum over. He was such a baki that Mumim, that other people would think were a mum over. He would classify as a mum kavua, and then later on, people would go ahead and say, "Oh, If Rav called this a mum kavua, in the future it will also be classified as a mum kavua. So that, based on that, the... Right. I mean, that he was so discerning. He was so particular, and those nuances because of his being a bikbaki. Rabbi wasn't willing to allow Rav to go in and paskin because he thought that others would learn from Rav and inappropriately learn from Rav because of his expertise that they would not understand. All right. Yore. He says, if you, Yore, can I give a Ra? Yore, he said, okay. Igamir Rishut Olamali, Mishka. Says, listen, what if he knows... I mean, the question should not be whether he has permission or not. The simple question should be, does he have the knowledge, the body of knowledge, in order to paskin? If he knows this factor, he can paskin. If he doesn't know, he can't paskin. Why do I have to go get permission to paskin? So he says, Mishum Masa Shahaya. Because there was such a case. The Tanya, Pam Echad Alach Rabbi Lamakom Echad. Rabbi traveled to a certain location. Rabbi Adam, Shim Gavlim Yisoteim Betuma. They were kneading their dough Betuma. Meaning that the isa, which has to have chala mufrash from it, has to be de'ayidei ta'ara, so the chala can be mufrash and eaten by the kohen. Here they're doing it betuma. She says, why are you doing this? Why are you kneading your dough betuma? There was a student that came through here. When it comes to waters of betzaim, they're not makshir. What are mei betzaim? Mei betzaim are waters from the swamps. Right, well, swamp water does not cause tuma, or is not makshir the kabel tuma. So the dough can be used with that water, and it will not be mekabel tuma. Hivahu, the Talmid really said made beitzim. He said beitzim of eggs. If you don't use water, but you rather use eggs to make the dough, then it's not mekabel tuma. It's not mukshar the kabel tuma. Supposed to, they misunderstood the word beitzim, and they understood it as bitzaim or made bitzaim. Rabbeinu Tam says that he doesn't understand. Tosfos mentions here, how do you mix up between beitzim and bitzaim? So Rabbeinu Tam says that they thought demei beitzim to come our hey bei batzim, not bitzaim but batzim. So that's how they confuse beitzim and batzim. Either way, there was some confusion in the language. So
he did not articulate well,
which is an interesting point here. But oh, maybe beitzim darshlo. Venu sober, and they thought maybe tzaim kamar. They thought maybe tzaim or maybe batzim are going to the Rabbeinu Tam. But tohu na mi baha, and they also made another mistake. May kir miyon u may pick up sulim ipnei shehein may beitzim or may bitzaim. That there's a mishnah in Parah. In Parah, you require mayim chayim, and over there it says you're not allowed to bring mayim chayim from these locations. These locations are may bitzaim. So they thought the same qualification that it's pasul by mayim chayim for Parah Duma should also make it that it's not makshir the kabel tuma by chala. Obviously, the two are not connected. One requires right a mayan live water mayim chayim, right? So the other way dead. Vinu sover min legabei chatat psile achshurei na milo machshiri. Since by chatat it's pasul, it's also not machshir. Velohi, of course that's not the case. Adam liyin chatat binin mayim chayim. You need live spring water. Achshurei kol goldo machshirei. Right, so that here you have to be machshir anything, any liquid is machshir the kabel tuma. So tana boto shal gazru. And that time they made a institution or a gzerah. Talmid al yireh elim keno tov shut mirabo. Talmid cannot give psak alocha until he's given permission from his rebbe. Again, why would that help you? Why does getting permission help over here? So Rashi claims over here until he gets rushut from his rebbe. V'chi avle rabo rushut midek daik be she'el shono patuach v'leitu ashomim et varav. That one of the requirements of a rebbe is to ensure that his talmid is able to communicate in a clear manner, that he can articulate and be clear in his psak halacha. The rebbe is not simply granting the right because of his body of knowledge or because of his understanding of the halacha, and therefore he knows how to paskin. Not only does he have to know how to paskin, he also has to be able to articulate and convey that which he knows in a proper manner. And with the rebbe, part of the rebbe's responsibility before he gives smicha is to ensure that that's the case, that the talmid is ra'oi to give psak halacha and articulates clearly. Anchum b'reid rabbi ami. Iklo the Chatar. He went to a place called Chatar. Darash Lahu, he gave a drasha. Mutar l'utot chitin b'pesach. You're allowed to soak the kernels of wheat on Pesach and then grind them down right away. Amelo, lav Rabbi Mani, dimintur, ika hocho. Isn't your Rebbe, Rabbi Mani, in the location? Why are you giving psak alocha? B'tanya, we have a brisa. Talmud al yireh alocha b'mkom rabo. Talmud, a student is not allowed to give psak alocha in front of his Rebbe. Unless he's at least three parsaot away from him, keneged machane Yisrael, the distance of the encampment of Klai Yisrael. So he has to be far enough away. Moshe Rabbeinu was the Mor HaRoha in the Machane Yisrael, and everybody who had anything to Lidrosh at Hashem would come before Moshe Rabbeinu, and that's B'chol Machane Yisrael. So any right area of Shlosh Parsaot, right, we would consider the purview or the area in which the influence, jurisdiction is a good word, thank you, jurisdiction of Moshe Rabbeinu within Machane Yisrael. Same thing with the Rebbe and the Talmid. As long as the Rebbe has jurisdiction here, the Talmid not can pass in here. So how did Rabbi Ma, how did Tanchum braid the Rabbi Ami? Go ahead and give Pesach Halacha. Amalo lava datai. Says, I didn't know. I didn't realize that he was in the area. I didn't know. Had I known, I definitely wouldn't give him Pesach Halacha. I just was not aware of the fact that he was giving him Pesach Halacha. Now, the next case here is seems to have nothing to do with anything that we're discussing right now. Question is, why is it brought down? So it might have to do with the girs over here, the girs that we have in our Gemara, which seems to be the wrong one. So I'm a little lava that he says, Rabbi Chiya Chazilau Gavra, Chiya such a son, an individual, Da'ava Koi Bebeit Kvarot, standing in the Beit Kvarot, Amalei La Ben Ish Ploni Kohenata, aren't you a son of a Kohen? What are you doing in the Beit Kvarot? Amalei In, says, I am a Kohen, Abu Da'ahu Gavra, but the father of this individual, meaning of myself, Gavain Ayim, straight after his eyes, Hava Natani Nabi Grusha, he went ahead and he saw a nice divorcee that he wanted to marry, and he did. And that made him to halal, and I'm born of that marriage. So I'm a Kohen halal, and you don't have to worry about it. That's it. Story told. What does this have to do with our Gemara? Right now, if we were talking about, what is it doing over here? So now, if you look in Rabbi Chiya Chazir, Rashi gives two interpretations of the possibility. He says, Lo yitparshalan my bayihach. I have no idea why this Gemara is over here. So Benir Beinai, Rashi gives one interpretation, is that even though Rabbi Chiya was a Talmud of Rabbi, and he was in the place of Rabbi, he still gave Pesach Halacha. Rashi says, why is he allowed to give Pesach Halacha? Because it's Afrushe Mi'isura. You see, in other places in Halacha, there's a difference between Pesach Halacha and Afrushe Mi'isura. For instance, when it comes to the bathhouse, the Gemara in Shabbos talks about the fact that you're not allowed to speak Divrei Torah within a bathhouse. But when it comes to Afrushe Mi'isura, Afrushe Mi'isura, then you can speak about it, or you can tell quickly, you can give a quick psak. I mean, again, it's not the difference between psak and Afrushe Mi'isura is also psak, but you can, if it's Afrushe Mi'isura, if it's tell them to quickly not to do something, or to prevent them from doing Isura, that you're allowed to do. So same thing over here, Rabbi Chiya was trying to prevent this Kohen from being in the Beit HaKvarot. So even though it was the area or the jurisdiction of his Rebbe Rabbi, nevertheless, he was allowed to say to him, leave the Beit HaKvarot. You can't be there, you're a Kohen. So that, Lafushim Yisur is permitted. That's Rashi's first.
Anybody could be a Machmir.
Right, but that Machmir over here, there's a clear Yisur. He's violating an Yisur. Violating an Yisur, you can separate him, because there is, it's time is of the essence to be Mafushim Yisur. That's one possibility. Then Rashi goes on to suggest something from the Yerushalmi, which Tosfos seems to agree with, is that the Girsa here really is Rabbi and not Rabbi Chiya. The Girsa is Rabbi, then it's two cases with Rabbi. Rabbi visited a place called Akko. That's what the Gemara says. Akko was a border town. It was a border town between Eretz Amim and Eretz Yisrael. Part of Akko was in Eretz Yisrael. Part of Akko was in Eretz Amim. And Eretz Amim is Mitameh. So now, in this case, he saw them kneading the dough in the part which was mitamei, right? So therefore, he asked them the question, how could you do this if you're using it with liquids? How could you be kneading the dough here? And the second question is, he sees a Kohen standing in the part that it's Eretz Amim. He says, what are you doing over there standing in Eretz Amim? So if that's the case, the two stories are connected by the fact that they're both stories about Rabbi in Akko asking questions. And that's why Rashi and Tosfos explain it based on the Yerushalmi. All right, now the other thing that Tosfos mentions over here is that in the presence, we said here, in the presence of his Rebbe, he's not allowed to give Pesach Halacha, but outside of three parsaot, he is allowed to give Pesach Halacha. In other places that we find that certain Tanaim or Marim refused to do Pesach Halacha as long as their Rebbe was around or alive, that they wouldn't give Pesach Halacha, Tosfos wants to differentiate between whether they had Reshut or not. If they have Reshut, then outside of the three parsaot, they can give Pesach Halacha. Inside the three parsaot, it's a key on the Kvod HaRav, and they can't do it. On the other hand, if they do not have permission, it's irrelevant whether they give Pesach Halacha in front of the Rav, not in front of the Rav, outside the three parsaot, inside the three parsaot, they cannot paskin when their Rebbe is still around, because they need to get the Pesach Halacha, they need to get Reshut from their Rebbe to give Pesach Halacha. And that Tosfos mentions on the previous Amud, the bottom previous Amud, that Smicha here, it's strange, just noting it for you, that the Smicha, or the Reshut, seems to be given by the Reish Galuta over here. But that the Reish Galuta wasn't, we've seen that in other Gemaras, it wasn't necessarily the Talmud Chacham, it was necessarily the key to the Mesorah. That many times they had to get advice, or they asked the Amoraim or Tanaim for how to paskin, or what the halacha should be, or we see them chastising the house of the Reish Galuta. So it tells us at the bottom, tells over here, it says, and then keep the Rishut, Mi'aba Mari, V'aba Mari, Mi'rath. So he says, Demi Sheishal Rishut, Yochol Litain Rishut. So he says, whoever has smicha can grant smicha. So that's the idea here, that the Rishut from Rabbi, again, when we went, why did Rabbi Chia over here go to Rabbi to get smicha for Rav and Rabbi Bar Chana? He could have given it himself. He had smicha. Why couldn't he have given him smicha? So he says, Shema Be'iro Shel Rabbi Haba. What you can't do is grant smicha in the, right, in the area where your rabbi is. So the same way you can't give psak halacha in front of rabbi, you can't grant smicha in front of your rabbi. If your rabbi is the one who gave you smicha, then the only kavod is to go get your rabbi to give smicha to your talmid. You'll come before him, tell him this person is ra'oi, and then he'll grant smicha. But not that you should give smicha in front of your rabbi. But what you do see here is that you have, the person has to be knowledgeable about the student. One is that it's given from Rebbe to Talmid. The one who has smicha gives smicha to another one. And number two, we saw above that you have to know the student in order to grant him smicha so he doesn't make mistakes. You know that he can articulate. You know that he can convey halacha properly. You have to know him. And number three is that it's given under the, right, auspices, which I have to say now, of the Reish Galuta. It seems from here that since it's given under the auspices of the Reish Galuta or the Rebbe of your Rebbe. So that, in that case, then the person who knows you has to show up and give, tell you that you know the information. So thereby, Rabbi, Rabbi Chia shows up and tells him, listen, this person's ra'oi for smicha, Rabbi, give him smicha. Same thing here with the Reish Galuta. We have to say something similar, that the Rabbi, the Rebbe of this individual, the one who wants to grant the smicha, goes to Reish Galuta and says, please grant him smicha over here. Even though maybe he doesn't know him directly, or maybe even he's not as qualified as the one who's granting smicha, nevertheless, it's done through the, they are the channel for granting smicha. And just like you don't give smicha in front of your Rebbe, maybe you don't give smicha in front of the Reish Galuta, or in the presence of the Reish Galuta, or in the ear of the Reish Galuta. And therefore, to be mechalek kavod to them, they are the ones who actually granted the right, the reshut. But it doesn't mean that the Rebbe of the individual, the one who taught him the Torah, is not involved in that process. So we saw with Rabbi Chia and Rav, and Rabbi Chia and Rabbi Bar Chana. Right now, the Gemara continues. Pshita, the palgo, hakamar dvahani. We know that you can have partial smicha. How do you know that from Rav? Right, Rav got partial smicha. He wasn't allowed to be matir b'chorot, but he got yore yore, and he got yodin yodin. So al tnai mahu, can you be granted a smicha al tnai? Tashma, damar le Rabbi Yochanan the Rabbi Shemin. Who says Rabbi Hariata b'rishutenu? Ad shedavoy tzlenu. You are with reshut, meaning that you have the reshut to give paskan alocha until you come over to us. So Rashi explains here, what does it mean? It's Rabbi Yochanan says Rabbi Shemin, you are going down to Bavel. You are permission to give psak halacha until you choser, until you return to us. The problem with this pshat is we just saw that smicha in Eretz Yisrael does not help you in Bavel. So why does Rabbi Yochanan smicha help him to go down to Bavel? So if you look, the Rabbeinu Chananel interprets it differently. It says, you have permission to give psak halacha on the condition that you come to us. I mean that your smicha is given out tonight. Now, the way Rashi is reading is that the smicha is for a fixed period of time. It's a smicha that terminates. It's only given for a partial time. So then he explains it the way he does, but that is the difficulty of the smicha being granted in Eretz Yisrael for Bavel. Rabbeinu Chananel says, no, the tnai here is not the time limit, that there's an expiration to the smicha, but the smicha is given out tonight that you fulfill certain requirements. What is the requirement? That you come to us. You have smicha, but you have to come over to us to be with us in Eretz Yisrael, and then you are granted smicha, or you have permission to paskin. Okay, gufa, amar shmo, beis shedanu dinam din el shenikra beis din chazuk. So we saw this din of shmo before. If two judges go ahead and dan, that it's a good din, except they're called a beis din chazuk. Tosfos over here says that it's even true with one judge. Says hadanakat shnayim mishum dafilu shnayim avu beis din chazuk. Avahu adin dechad nami dinay din. According to Shmuel, even one judge is a din. Ah, why does it tell you about two judges? To tell you you're still called a chatzuf by two judges. Not only by one judge are you chatzuf, even two judges are still chatzuf. Yati Rav Nachman, Kamalai Shmait, he said over this din of Shmuel. Eight for Rav, the Rav Nachman. Afilu shnai mezakin, o shnai mechaybin, mecharomarin, o yudea. You have three judges. Two of them say is patur, two of them say is chayav, and one says, I don't know. Yosifa dayanim. You have to add on dayanim, because when you say any yudea, it's as if you don't exist. If that's the case, just let him finish it off with two. Forget it. The one guy says, "Any hotel and finish up with two." So shiny autumn to me, Kara died to Talata Yatibe. And when they sat down in the case, they sat down with three. If you sit down with three and then you lose that one because he says any hotel, you need to finish with three. And the intent of the judgment or the adjudication here was to have three judges. Then you have to finish with three judges. Again, if you start with two, all right, fine, then it's a din. But if you start with three and then you end up with two, that's not a din. Over here in our case, they sat down with two to start with. You start down with two. It's a din, but it's chatzuf. When it comes to adjudication in a din, that requires three. Pshara, settlements, only require two. The koach pshara mikoach adin. The koach pshara is greater than koach adin. Sheshnaim shetanu v'leidinim yicholim lachzor b'hem. Two people, when you have judges, two judges, then they can, the balidim, the litigants can walk away from the din because it's not binding. On the other hand, shnayim shasu pshara, if two of them are doing sort of some sort of pshara, some sort of settlement, ein balidinim yichulim lechzar b'hem. They're not allowed to, right, they're not allowed to reverse the position because they've accepted. Whatever these, they went for some sort of settlement, but they wanted to use an arbitrator to help them reach a settlement, and the balidim, the litigants, then accepted what the arbitrator says. It's binding, and they can't walk away from it. So over there, by the settlement case, or the arbitration case, you only require two. By din, you require three. So what do you see from this? That's against Shmuel. Shmuel Gamliel says there's a minimum requirement of three. If you use two, it's not a din, and you can be chosen there. If it's really a din, if two was really a din, you wouldn't be at the litigants being able to walk away from it. The fact that they can walk away from it shows you that it's not a din. And what do you want to suggest? The Rabbanon argue on Rabbi Shimon Gamliel? I'm a Rabbi Abo. Rabbi Abo says, Shnaim Shadanu, the Divrei HaKol, according to everybody, ain't din am din. It's not a good din. So we know that the Rabbanon, even the Rabbanon agree that it's not a good din. Just like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, they don't agree. What says, Gavra, Gavra, Karamit? What type of question is this? You're asking Shmuel from Rabbi Abo? Rabbi Abo says nobody argues on Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. That's not the case. Shmuel believes that they do argue. Shmuel says that dinim din, and he believes the Rabbanon argue on Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Rabbi Abba believes that when it's two people, it's not a good din. He says nobody argues on Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, and everybody agrees that Shnaim is not a good din. Shmuel, who says Shnaim is a good din, says no, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says this, but the Rabbanon disagree with him. The Rabbanon disagree, and I hold like the Rabbanon that two is a good din. So now we have a machlokas between Shmuel and Rabbi Abba, whether there is a Rabbanon who argue on Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Do the Rabbanon argue or not? And that will make a difference what you think. A din by two judges is a good din. And according to the Tosfos explains, even according to one judge is a good din. According to Shmuel, right, two judges, even one judge is a good din. According to Rabbi Abo, two judges is not a good din, because there is no Rabbanon that say that. And even one judge would not be a good din. How do you reconcile Rabbi Abo here, that it's not good, and the Rabbi Abo, and the statement we started today with, which is Dan Afil Yuchidi, Mumche Dan Afil Yuchidi. Tosfos before mentioned that it's all Takanas Chachamim. And based on that, he reconciles between the two. Midoraisa dinei menun din. That even two or one, it's not a good din. But midrabanon, they say that yachid mumche could be done. So even Rabbi Bo will subscribe to that. Rabbi Bo is talking to me din doraisa. Din doraisa, two judges or one judge is not a good din. Midrabanon, they were mitakein that even one judge is a good judge. And that's how Tosfos explained it before. And that's how he reconciled between that Gemara of Dan Mumche, Dan Yechidi, whereas Rabbi Bo here is talking at a level doraisa. Over there, they're talking about the Din Darabanan, and over here, we're talking about the level doraisa. Okay, we'll stop over there.